Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in the studios of WMOT-FM. The MTSU Raider rocket team is going to compete at the 2011 NASA Student Launch Initiative. In 2009, they competed in Huntsville, Alabama at the Marshall Space Flight Center, and they came away with the award for Best Design. They competed against teams like Georgia Tech, Arizona State, Embry-Riddle Aeronautical, Florida Institute of Technology, Alabama Huntsville, Iowa State, Mississippi State, Auburn, Utah State, University of North Dakota. This year's team includes Tyler Stokes, the team manager, and Justin Jones, the safety manager, and they're both here today to talk with us about building rockets.
Hi, Jenna.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing well, thank you.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about how this started? Because this Raider rocket team hasn't been in existence all that long. It came out of the Department of Engineering Technology, right?
That's exactly right. A couple of years ago, Dr. Hadna Saab, who's one of the professors in engineering technology and one of his students, decided that they both had a passion for rockets and that they were going to take it upon themselves to apply to the Tennessee Space Foundation for some money. In the end, they ended up getting some grant money, $5,000 worth, and put the proposal into NASA for the student launch initiative that you had mentioned earlier. They were successful, and when they went down there, they had done such a good job designing the rocket that they ended up taking first place in Best Design. And so it was a pretty fortuitous start to the team, and we've tried to keep it going ever since. So that brings us to today.
Now, what are the the rocket initiative judges in these contests looking for? What kind of criteria do they judge the entries on?
Well, there's a couple different criteria. There's an actual competition that deals with how well your rocket performs, and the criteria for that is how close it comes to 1 mile high. So it's sort of it's a little bit like The Price is Right, where you want to get as close to 1 mile without going over, because they penalize you twice as hard for every foot you go over as every foot you go under. So there's a lot of science and testing that goes into getting it exactly to that 1 mile mark, and that's really the quantitative part of the contest. But then there's also some more subjective parts which deal with the design not only with the creativity of it, but also with how well it's put together. And that's really one of the things that we excelled in back in 2009, was the team put in so much work and effort getting the rocket perfectly smooth, having it look really good, that they won Best Design. And this year we're hoping to definitely take that to the next level.
So Best Design is all about aerodynamics. It's not about aesthetics.
It's a little bit about both. You have to obviously make the rocket very aerodynamic to have it function properly, but you also want to make it look seamless. That's one of the things that takes a lot of work. There's a lot of sanding and using these different materials that goes into that. So I would say aesthetics and aerodynamics both play a part for sure.
Justin, are you given a set of parameters about how big your rocket has to be?
Well, not exactly. You can make the rocket pretty much as big as you want, but you also need to contain the rocket to the size that you need to have to accomplish your payload.
So do you all have to accomplish the same goal, in essence? Or are you trying to accomplish different goals?
Well, there's each team chooses a scientific test to go up with the rocket. That's one of the requirements, and that's also part of the contest. It's in a separate part of the judging. And so each scientific test may weigh a different amount, and it may be a different size.
Okay.
So depending on the size of the scientific test is really what you have to base the size of the rocket around, and then the aerodynamics go into that to determine the motor size and the fins and the whole part.
And one of the strong points of the 2009 victory was that you were able to recover your payload, which in their case was a Geiger counter. So that is also taken into consideration in the judging as well.
Yeah, correct. We're going to do a payload this year where we're going to have a camera in the rocket that is actually going to kind of pinpoint a location for us and give us the coordinates down on the ground using some sort of laser. And we're also going to have the rocket glide. We're going to have wings pop out and it turn into a glider and use GPS to land it where we want it.
And then when you recover the payload, you will be able to see what the camera has captured?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in addition to being able to see what it's captured once we recover it, the unique part of our payload is that, as Justin was saying, it's going to turn into a glider, and that's almost unheard of in these competitions. Most of them simply have a parachute come out and it sinks down to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is going to actually glide around like you would see a hang glider, and we're going to be able to control its directions, and the camera will give us back the information in real time. So we don't have to actually wait until we get the payload back to see what it's seen. It's going to relay us a video feed and the coordinates of what it looks at in real time. So this could mimic, if a soldier was on the ground and wanted to see coordinates of something, or if disaster relief, they needed to find out where survivors were, this could mimic something in the real world.
So when you watch it in real time, you'll be watching on a laptop or a control panel screen?
Yeah, it's exactly right. It'll be a laptop that we have down in our station at the competition.
What sort of materials do you guys need to construct a rocket?
Well, the rocket, you can get kits that are cardboard. We're going to try to use carbon fiber this year and step it up a little bit. But besides that, you need epoxies for the seams of the fins. You need the engine and lots of aluminum this year, parachute material.
So the criteria have changed in terms of what you actually make it out of from prior experiences.
Yeah, that's right. And it's really up to each team to choose their materials as long as they're within the rules that NASA sets forth. And the rules can get a little tricky sometimes because they'll tell you it may have to have certain, it can't be flammable or it can't be this or it can't be that. But other than that, they sort of let you choose your own materials. And we've chose all the best. We've chose high-grade aluminum, carbon fiber, which is generally very expensive, although our school has a good source to get it. And so we're going to have a very beautiful rocket aesthetically and aerodynamically this year because of those high-grade materials.
Now, obviously, you have to be astute in math, physics, science, chemistry, but do you necessarily have to be an engineering technology major to be a member of the team?
No, actually, we have a member of the team that's actually in special education.
Wow.
So, I mean, we accept anyone. Anyone that can put forth any elbow grease or time or has any interest in this, are welcome.
And that's one of the things that I think everybody's learning as we go along is that it's not something you're going to come into where the rest of the team is these, experienced NASA engineers who are simply telling you what to do. Everybody's really learning as we go along. And so for the guys that are physics majors and engineering majors, and also for the guys that are special ed or chemistry majors, I mean, we're all learning at this at the same pace,
aerospace.
Really. Yeah, aerospace guys. So this is really a learning experience for everyone on the team, and we've seen some of our best members actually come from areas outside of the traditional studies.
So if there are gaps in your education, or maybe, your science education wasn't as good at the high school you came from as it was at the high school where Joe Blow came from in Oak Ridge, then you shouldn't feel intimidated at all, as long as you've got a passion for this particular thing.
Right. I mean, no one should be intimidated. I mean, some people have knowledge that others don't, mm-hmm. even not being in that certain field.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone that can solve a problem for us, we might have mm-hmm. this certain problem with this engineering or this design.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, if somebody comes onto the team with a limited amount of knowledge, the amount they get once they're on the team is incredible because, like Justin was saying, each person may have a certain skill. Like, we're meeting with a guy today that has a certain skill with carbon fiber. No one else knows about it, but soon the entire team's going to know about how to work with carbon fiber. And there's other guys that work well with aerodynamics, and I didn't know the first thing about aerodynamics, oddly enough, when I came into this, but now I've got a great amount of knowledge because of the aerospace guys and the guys that have worked on cars before. So we're learning a lot together as a team on this.
Being able to work in the machine shop here.
Oh, it's
a lot.
Huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Over
awesome. At Voorhees, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's right across the parking lot from where our office is located.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Justin, what are your responsibilities as safety manager? How do you make sure that everything is as conditions are as safe as possible and prevent against accidents?
Well, I mean, obviously, I can't. We work at different times. Everybody can go work on this rocket at separate times, on their own time. And obviously, I can't supervise everybody, but I can inform everyone of the rules and make sure they understand them. make sure people are wearing their safety glasses in the shop and if they're, you know, using any type of machinery. And another thing is, you know, with the rocket, we have to have a backup parachute just in case the glider system, there's a problem in that. So that's another issue. And just making sure everyone understands the NAR rules, the National Association of Rocketry regulations.
And what are some of the safety regulations that you have to adhere to?
Well, like for certain motors or certain engines, if you have one or more high-powered engines, then you have to know certain rules on the launch. You also have to be certified, which we're possibly going to try to do. Someone has to be certified. So,
and we're actually going Sunday. I just signed Justin up as we were talking for this. But Sunday we're going to go to Manchester. And Vanderbilt's going to be there and some other schools with people that are what they refer to as level 3 certified. Mm-hmm. And when we shoot our rocket off in their presence, then that will make us level 1 certified. And so myself as the president and Justin as the safety manager are both going to have that done. And then by the time the actual launch in April comes, we'll have gotten to level 2. So we'll know more and more about the different rules and regulations as we go along.
What is the fuel?
It's ammonium perchlorate, and it's extremely powerful fuel. I mean, this is it's one of the things that Justin's actually going to have to have in his certification is the ability to transport these fuels. And so that's how powerful this stuff is that the government doesn't even like it going across state lines because it's ammonium perchlorate can be used to make a lot of different things, and so they don't like for just anyone to have this stuff. But
are we talking homeland security type issues?
Right. I mean, it can be, you know, it can be used for different things.
Yeah. So you have to know how to store it, mm-hmm. and then you, as you transport it, say you're going to a competition, then you have to have a hazard sign, warning sign on the trailer or the vehicle in which you're traveling, that kind of thing.
Correct. And everyone needs to be familiar with the MSDS, or the MSDS needs to be available to all the members as well.
Right, which is material safety data sheet.
Yeah. Okay. You guys seem very, 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 very proactive. How much do you depend upon Dr. Nassab for guidance and for instruction and for correcting mistakes and that kind of thing? He is your faculty advisor.
Very. Dr. Nassab and also Dr. Nate Callender from the aerospace department he was also proactive, and he actually sought out Dr. Nassab after seeing some of our flyers to ask him about this. And, you know, as an expert in aerospace, he's helped us with the glider system because that's a pretty new thing. And then Dr. Nassab, who's been through several of these competitions, he is so good at knowing the things that NASA will require, which is they really put you through the ringer on making sure you're cross your T's and you dot your I's. So he helps us a ton in that. Every time I have a harebrained idea, I go to him, and he'll tell me, no, it won't work because of this, or if you do that, it may work. And so, you know, he likes for us to do it ourselves, and I think we've done a pretty good job of that for the most part, but he's certainly there to help us with absolutely anything that we need. And also, he gets us all of our materials. So if it wasn't for him, this wouldn't even have a prayer.
Yeah, we try our hardest to do everything on our own. But sometimes you have to ask the geniuses the questions.
Yeah, okay.
Were you guys interested in rocketry in high school, or is this something that developed only after you got to MTSU?
I wasn't, actually. Me and him had a summer class together, and we talked about it in the summer, and I joined it. I mean, I'm interested now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely gonna be fun and informative. So
yeah, same with me. I had Dr. Nassab's thermodynamics class, and you know, after seeing how he made it very interesting, seeing all the different reactions that take place, so I thought, well, this rocket would be a fun project to take on, and that's pretty much where it started.
Like when I first heard the idea, I was thinking, you know, a little 3-foot rocket,
uh-huh.
you know, that you see on TV, but you know, the one last year was 11 foot tall. You know, that's a big rocket.
Yeah.
and ours will be that tall, too, at least. And because we're making it of carbon fiber instead of the cardboard, it's going to be light, so we can make it even bigger than the previous ones.
Do you decorate it with MT logos, or what do you put on it?
that's in the works. We might have to keep that a secret until we break it out at launch day. But
so it's not going to be like a World War II bomber where you paint the pinup girl on the side of it or anything
that's
like that.
Good. Now that you mention it, yeah, that's that. But yeah, carbon fiber, first of all, has a really cool like a checkerboard design, just the nature of it. I mean, that's not something you paint on it. That's just what it looks like. And it's very space age looking. And so it's going to be as sharp of a rocket as will be at that competition, that's for sure.
Okay. When you leave MTSU and go into your respective careers, what do you think you will be able to take into the job market from this experience that is going to help you in what you do in life for a living?
Oh, man. I would say this project has probably been, it's on the top of my priority list every day. I'll put it like that, because I think one of the things you see in a lot of classes is a lot of theory. MTSU does a good job of getting us in labs, but still you don't really have an idea of how a project works. With financial restrictions and time restrictions, personnel restrictions, different rules and regulations. And so what's cool about this project is we take all of the really intense theory that deals with rocket science, the materials that we have to use, the different payloads, which are all the theory part of it. We put it together, which is sort of like the labs, but then you have to integrate all of that into a project that works in the exact same manner that a real project for NASA would work, which is the real world.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think when we go to employers, I'm going to say, hey, look, I was able to do this with these deadlines, with these different restrictions, and you know, this is something that was outside of the classroom that we were proactive about. So I'm going to take a lot away from this, for sure.
Justin, what do you think you're going to take away from?
Well, first off, I'm going to give Tyler his props. He's been, his leadership is great. He definitely dedicates his time. Something I'm hoping to think, the creativity, you know, getting your imagination working, it definitely heightens that. I'm hoping that this will help me later on in the future, maybe with design or something, you know, something I wasn't really interested in, creating a rocket or joining a rocket team or even, you know, being a team member. So there's a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot.
What careers are you guys looking to go into when you graduate?
I definitely want to be in some type of industry. I worked at Bridgestone for a while, and I really enjoyed it there, being in the middle of the plant. I would like to get in some sort of engineering department somewhere, but I really want to be hands-on and in the middle of it.
Right. You wanted, even if you go up to a management level, you want to know what the people on the line have to do and what they
have
to go through.
Right. I want to be right there in the machinery. I want to see it working and have my hands on it.
And that's one of the things that I'm definitely going to take away is when I have a Six Sigma class right now, which is kind of a manufacturing class, and the professor, Mr. Gore, was telling me that when he worked at Nissan, he said if there was a problem on the line, it didn't matter who caused it. It was every manager's responsibility. And I think that's one of the things we're seeing with this project is because we're the only ones, I mean, our 10-member team's the only ones that have the chance to get it done. So if there's a problem, it's everyone's responsibility to make sure that problem's fixed. And I think that's one of the things that we're definitely going to take away, or at least I'm going to take away, is learning to, if you see something going wrong, you know, you get on it right then and there. And that's regardless of whether you're management or on the ground, it'll help you.
The manager can't lay it off on the grunt, and the grunt can't lay it off on the manager.
Right, right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
And what career are you going to go into?
I've always really wanted to go into alternative energies. And so, you know, I've been trying for years to find people with solar or wind or different types of energies. But that's always been a passion of mine. So hopefully I'll land on my feet somewhere.
Have you talked to Dr. Cliff Ricketts?
You know, I haven't. His name was mentioned to me by Dr. Nassab, but now that you mentioned that, I'm going to have to go talk to him again for sure.
I don't know where it is, but there is a golf cart on this campus owned by the university that is run on solar panels.
I've seen that.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's over at the Voorhees ET building, engineering technology building a lot. There's also a biofuels bus that runs on that. So MTSU is definitely on the cutting edge.
Do you guys think that alternative energy is that green jobs in essence are the answer to the economy? Do you think that this is the way to go?
Oh man, you just hit one of my hot buttons right there.
I threw you a softball.
You did, yeah. This is a T-ball. I definitely think, you know, there's so much coal in this country to begin with that coal will be around for as long as any of us are alive. There's a ton of coal. Oil, on the other hand, we have a $300 billion deficit every year in this country from fossil fuels. So that's $300 billion that we pay to other countries. And, I mean, if we cut that in half, it doesn't take you a lot. You know, it doesn't take a math major to divide $150 billion into however many people there are in this country to realize how much extra money we could have if we produced our own energy in this country. Whether or not that's from coal powering electricity or whether or not it's from wind, water, solar power, there's a ton of different things that could be used to help this country out. But it will be, I think, in my opinion, the next Bill Gates, Warren Buffett's are going to come out of energy. Whether or not it's green, I don't know, but it'll be energy, I think, for sure.
Justin, you had a look on your face like, don't get him started.
I don't really have an opinion on it. Personally, I think energy can help, but again, I always think that the oil and all that's always going to be used. I mean,
yeah,
that is too deeply ingrained in our culture.
Exactly.
Well, it'll be used.
Here comes the rebuttal.
Everybody, if you get a chance, Google Tesla Motors, and a lot of people don't like that company because they've lost a lot of money since they've started, but this is a car company that's coming out with a car next year called the Model S. It's going to be able to go 300 miles on one charge, which is just about 20% less than your car can use on gas right now. And we're not getting worse at technology, we're getting better. So it's only going to improve from there, and soon electric cars will be able to go further than gas. They'll be faster, they'll be more powerful, they'll be less expensive to run. And as soon as that happens, it's game over for gasoline, and hopefully that'll be soon.
Okay.
We actually had this exact discussion last Wednesday over lunch.
Yeah, we did. So,
going back to the rockets for a moment, it must make you guys very happy to be able to get out of the classroom and be actually able to apply what you're learning from books and lectures into a hands-on experience. You don't get that in a great many types of classrooms, but you do through the Raider Rocket team. You actually get to apply what you learn in the classroom to something that will help you learn more and is also fun at the same time. That must be really invaluable.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. Like I said earlier, like in the future, if I'm ever in a management position, I still want to be hands-on somewhere. I mean, I just like being in there. I think you understand how it works better. So the hands-on is definitely beneficial.
You don't want to be an ivory tower guy who just operates in a management world and doesn't know what your employees are going through, or operates on some kind of a narrative about what his employees are going through but doesn't know the real deal.
Yeah, and even if you are even upper level management, one of my classes, project management, the professor, Dr. Charles Perry, worked at IBM for 28 years, and he always talks about one of the managers he had and how bright this manager was. And if anybody ever tried to pull the wool over his eyes, he caught it in an instant. So even if you're at the very top level, you've really got to know your stuff from the ground level up to be able to know whether or not the people who are coming to you know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, without experience like this, I don't think you rise up in the career fields at all.
You know, Dr. Farudistan has had quite a level of achievement with his teams constructing dune buggies and go-karts and all kinds of vehicles that run on alternative energy. They've competed in a great many competitions. Is there any, do you anticipate establishing any kind of a rivalry in the awards competition category, or the awards less important to you than the actual doing of it?
Yes.
I want yes to all of the above.
You
want to beat the dune buggy guys in the awards categories.
I'm definitely a hyper-competitive guy, but those guys are really good people. The leader for that whole thing, his name is Bahir, and we're good friends. We have several classes together, and he actually is who was able to get the carbon fiber, or help us get the carbon fiber. They do a really good job. You're right. Their projects, time and time again, seem to win. But if I was to sit here and tell you I didn't want to beat everyone we face, including Vanderbilt and MIT, it would definitely be a lie. I tell these guys every time, hey, we got to do extra work because most people don't win these things. There's only one winner, and I want it to be us.
Is there any crossover? Are there any guys on both teams? I'm surprised they'd be able to find the time, but go ahead.
I'm a boat owner, so I love the boats. So I actually thought about doing the solar boat thing maybe next year. Mm-hmm. I talked to them a little bit about it today. And the whole competitive thing, I'd like to see all of us do great because it's good for the school.
Yeah.
You know, and plus, you know, like he said, a lot of people that are on the other teams are in all of our classes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're classmates as well. But, I mean, it wouldn't bother me if they were second and we were first.
Well, and we're in different competitions. Ultimately, you want us all to be first. You want the Solar Boat guys to win theirs thing, yeah. The Moon Buggy guys to win theirs, and us to win ours. But the guy who does our graphic design, William Wang, is actually Dr. Nassab's graduate assistant, and he's on both the Solar Boat team and our team. So he's a super busy guy, but he really knows his stuff.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah. So even at a big school, or a school with a great, huge undergraduate population, the engineering technology universe is still small enough, so you guys pretty much know each other, right? And you cross paths a great deal, both in and out of the classroom.
Yeah. Oh,
pretty
yeah.
much.
Yeah, and yeah.
You'll take a lot of the same classes with the same people semester after semester.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean it gets to be a pretty tight-knit group of people, and there's definitely a core group of people that love engineering and that seem to always, even if they're not in class, they're messing around with this or that, you know, in the buildings trying to build something. So you get to see certain people a lot. And
when is the 2011 competition, and is it going to be at Huntsville again, or?
Yeah, it's in April, April 14th, if my memory serves me correct, down in Huntsville. But there are, I think, three or four more submissions we have to make to NASA. We have to have a critical design or preliminary design review, which sort of tells them, okay, here's the dimensions, and it's more of a theoretical view of what it's going to be. Then we have to have the critical design review, which is, okay, we've started building it and we're almost done. These are the problems we've run into. This is how we plan to fix it. Then you have the final design review, which is it should be good to go, and then you've got the competition. So in addition to the proposal, which we've already sent in, that's a total of four written documents to NASA, four deadlines, and then the final competition.
So they're actually inspecting your work at each stage of the process along the way. It's not just, you know, count down 3, 2, 1, and then, you know, there's a lot more judging that goes on before the final launch.
And I think that's what people initially thinks is what it's like.
Yeah.
They think it's just the launch.
You go out there and shoot it.
Yeah. And then that you've got a bunch of judges looking at a rocket going off, and that's what they judge you on. But actually, they are judging you on every stage of the implementation.
That's absolutely. And they make cuts at each step. So you've got to be on your game.
They'll kick you out.
If you're not ready, then they're going to say, well, you didn't have your preliminary design review correct. You can't come to the competition.
You could be eliminated before you even get to Huntsville.
Oh, exactly.
Forget about packing your bags.
That's absolutely right. And that's happened to some teams before. So you've got to really be on your game. And they're trying to mimic the real world. You know, if NASA has a $20 billion project and they're, you know, 2 years behind, the government's not going to keep paying them. They're going to say, you know, you're not ready. We're not going to pay you for this. And that's what they're trying to mimic, is to say, hey, if you're not on your P's and Q's and you don't have this ready, then, you know, it's over.
If you're one day late on some of that paperwork, it's over.
Yeah.
You can have the whole rocket built and it'd be awesome.
They're very, very strict on the deadlines.
Oh.
And you've got to have the paperwork just right in addition to the design and everything else. Oh, yeah. You guys, yeah. No, you hate paperwork, right?
Well, we were sitting there emailing each other back and forth and on the phone, and Justin even had his poor wife work on our proposal with us for like 3 hours because she's really good at Adobe Acrobat, which is the format you have to send it in. So when we really put I think our proposal was 74 pages long.
I used all my resources on that one.
Yeah, yeah. So it was very, very time consuming, but we really put something we were proud of together, and that was step 1 of 5. So hopefully 2 of 5 will be just as good.
Well, it's a government agency, so you know it's going to be bureaucratic, right? This is what bureaucrats do: dot the I's and cross the T's.
That's right. That's right.
Anybody interested in Raider Rocket? Who do they contact, and how do they get in contact with you?
Well, I'm definitely the person to contact, and my name is Tyler Stokes. My email address is jts4x@mtmail.mtsu.edu. You can also come to the Engineering Technology Building and find Dr. Ahad Nassab, and he can direct you. Our meetings are every Wednesday at 5 o'clock, in VET room 171, which is the Engineering Technology Building.
Which is on, if you're driving, go up Middle Tennessee Boulevard and then turn right onto Falconberry Drive, and that's where Voorhees is.
Yeah, right there on the corner.
That's right. It's directly across, well, kind of catty corner from the football stadium.
Right. And Dr. Nasab's email address is anasab@mtsu.edu.
That's right. No empty mail. I've made that mistake a few times.
Justin and Tyler, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
This is MTSU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Please join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com, and we're available on iTunes.